Good afternoon, and welcome to the Azure Power Investor Briefing conference call. During today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question at any time, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. I would now like to turn the conference over to Nathan Judge. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining our call. We are very pleased to bring you an update on the story. We have Ranjit Gupta with us today, CEO. As you all know, he joined mid-year and will be providing an update on the company. We also submitted slides that everybody can access on our website. Please note, our safe harbor statements are contained within our press release, presentation materials, and available on our website. These statements are important and integral to all our remarks. There are risks and uncertainties that could cause our results to differ materially from those expressed or implied by forward-looking statements. So we encourage you to review the press release and the presentation we just furnished in our Form 6K on our website for a more complete description. Also contained in our press release and presentation materials are certain non-GAAP measures that we reconcile to the most comparable GAAP measures, and those reconciliations are also available on our website in the presentation materials. And with that, just as a bit of format, what we'll do is we'll have a presentation, and then we'll open the call up to questions and answers. We do have those kind enough to join us today in the room, but we'll also have people joining by phone that we'll ask at the end of the meeting. With that, I'll pass it over to Ranjit.
We go to the presentation. So I guess we can start on slide two, right? So you know, if you all have access to the slides, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at the slide two, really this you know, this exercise is about, you know, how we believe our company is well positioned for growth in the coming years. We want to specifically talk about the projects that we have recently won, the auctions that took place in November-December timeframe, which was a 500 megawatt manufacturing tender linked to a 2,000 megawatt, you know, project tender. Right. So this was a tender which Azure has participated in the past, but it never crossed the finish line, and we have been working with the government to make the tender conditions more, you know, friendly to developers, less risk for the developers. And the current structure of the tender is actually a very good structure for the developers. And we were excited to take part in this tender. There were three participants, you know, ourselves and another company won half the tender each. There was 1,000 megawatts of manufacturing and 4,000 megawatts of projects on bid. So, you know, one company won 500, we won 500, so 500 and 2,000 and 500 and 2,000. Apart from that, so for this 2,000 megawatt capacity, we have the letter of award, whereas in the tender conditions, there was also a green shoe option wherein we could double the capacity that we had won. We had the option of doubling the capacity, and we had been given a certain amount of time for us to accept that option. So we, you know, after discussing the board, we accepted that option. We are still awaiting the letter of award for that. But, you know, we have just, even a couple of days back, I've met the SECI officials, the Solar Energy Corporation of India officials, who are the people who are doing this, who are organizing this auction. And they feel that within a week or 10 days, they will be issuing the LOAs for the green shoe. So we fully expect to have 4,000 megawatts of projects to build. These projects need to be built over the next 5.5 years. So the first project to be commissioned in the calendar year 22, and then 23, and 24, and 25. So about 1,000 megawatts each year. Before that, you know, we already have capacity that we had won in auctions previously. About 1,300 megawatts that we are constructing. These 4,000 megawatt of projects are at a very high tariff compared to the other auctions that take place in India. They're, given the Azure portfolio itself, these tariffs are about 15% higher than the tariffs that we have won over the last year. We have also very recently appointed a banker advisor to sell some assets from our portfolio to be able to recycle capital. We will need capital for this for these 4,000 megawatts over the next few years. As you know, we have recently raised capital to completely fund the projects that are under construction that we had won earlier. So, but you know, going forward for these 4,000 megawatts, we will need capital. Some of it will come from assets which we will sell. Some of it will come from internal accruals. For some of it, we might have to approach the market. So we are figuring out what will be the cheapest source for us to raise this capital. Since the time since the time we have come, we have tried to Murli and I have worked very hard to try and see how we can make the company more efficient. One of the ways to do that was to try and reduce the cost that that we incur in the company on a day-to-day basis. Even though our megawatt capacity on the DC side is expected to grow by about 40% in the next financial year compared to this financial year, we are expecting to drop our G&A costs in the coming year. So even though the company is growing, we are shrinking the G&A. And also to better use the capital that we have, there are certain projects that we have managed to drop. 450 megawatts of projects which we had won earlier have been dropped. Another 150 megawatts, we are very confident that we will be able to drop over the next month or so. So about 600 megawatts of projects would have been dropped over the last 6 or 7 months that we have been at Azure, thereby making sure that we are building assets which are accretive to the company and not on the margin. And the fact that we have been dropping these assets has turned out to be good for us, because we have been able to replace these assets with assets that are going to be at 15%, 14-15% higher tariff. So we also expect that with this current portfolio, which will take us beyond 7 gig, that we would be very close to being self-funded. We would not need to raise more capital, and we could even start thinking about returning capital to our shareholders. I'd like to move to slide 3. The slide 3 shows our current portfolio, which is already constructed about 1,804 megawatts. That's in a dark shade of yellow. And in gray, it is the capacity that we are currently constructing. So there is about 1,290 megawatts which are under construction, 1,200 megawatts which are under construction in the state of Rajasthan, 90 megawatts in the state of Assam. Apart from that, we have also shown another 2,000 megawatts, the first 2,000 megawatts for which we have the LOA. Most of that capacity will come up in Rajasthan. And the next 2,000 megawatts for which LOA is awaited, we are looking to do that capacity outside Rajasthan to just diversify the risk. This slide also shows how we are seeing the 7,000 megawatt portfolio, how the counterparty is going to become better and better. We expect that out of the 7,000 megawatt portfolio, less than 5% would be non-investment grade. So most of our portfolio is going to be investment grade. And in the years to come, looking at the assets that we are looking to recycle, we are hopeful that this number would come down even further, and we would be, our aim would be to get into a situation where we are almost close to 100% investment grade off-takers by recycling our assets, by looking at who are the off-takers that we need to work with going forward. As it is, if you see on the solar side, typically we get paid on time, and we don't see issues of delayed payments. There are a couple of distribution companies that delay payments a few months here and there, and there was a case of Andhra Pradesh which had delayed for a very long time, but now recently after the court order they have started paying. So so therefore the risk anyway is low, but to further reduce the risk, we are trying to see that we can move as much as possible to a counterparty which is either central government or a strong distribution companies like Gujarat or Maharashtra or Bangalore and so on. that's what we want to convey with this slide. So and going to slide four, like I have already mentioned about the 4 gigawatts that that we have won, these are the slide conveys the overview which I've already provided. As far as the benefits of these projects are concerned, the one big benefit, of course, is that the counterparty is SECI, which is a central agency, and you know, SECI credit is one of the best credits you can get in India. So we are happy to have SECI as our counterparty for these 4,000 megawatts. Also, currently, the way the interstate transmission charges are concerned, the renewable energy projects do not attract ISTS charges. They don't, you know, the interstate transmission charges are not charged to renewable energy projects. And this exemption expires in December 2022, right? So, however, with these 4,000 megawatts, we are grandfathered into this scheme. So whether, you know, the government extends this ISTS waiver going forward for other projects, our 4,000 megawatts are safe and they will not attract ISTS charges even if other projects start being billed for transmission charges and losses. And like I had mentioned, there are certain key changes that we have managed to get in the power purchase agreement for these projects. For example, there is, you know, that the anyway, these projects are going to be connected to the interstate grid, so we don't expect any curtailments. There has been no curtailments on interstate projects, you know, so far. But even if there is any reason for them to curtail, the central grid will have to provide us with written instructions as to why they are curtailing power, if at all they do deem curtailment is required. And if there is any curtailment, then they will have to give us the deemed generation charges, which will be 100% of the tariff, and they will have to be paid in the subsequent month instead of in the previous PPA. There were provisions for deemed generation, but they were to be paid, you know, out of if we generate less power, if we generate extra power, and you know, there was all kinds of bells and whistles around payment of this deemed generation. But now the clause is very simple that if they curtail us, you know, then they have to pay us for deemed generation, and that deemed generation payment has to be made in the subsequent month. Also, there is, you know, because of the fact that these projects are going to be built over the next 5.5 years, one of the key provisions which are required for us was the change in law provision. So the change in law provision is that if there is any change in duties or taxes in the next 4 or 5 years, we are going to be exempt from those taxes. For example, the safeguard duty that is currently at about 15% on imported modules expires in July end. If for any reason that is extended or some new duty is imposed on import of modules, over the next 5.5 years, we are going to be exempt from those duties, and those duties will be refunded to us if there are any changes in duties. So that is a big benefit that we you know that we have. The other thing which is important in this 4,000 megawatts is that you know, going forward, we once the ISTS, though this tariff, you know, in India we have to look at the tariff as from both perspectives, right? We have to look at the tariff from the perspective of the generator, and we also have to look at the tariff from the perspective of the buyer, right? So the tariff needs to make sense for both parties, right? So, in you know, we believe that as the ISTS transmission charges and waivers are removed, whether that happens at the end of 2022 or it, you know, it gets extended for another 6 months or a year or whatever it is, there is a lot of clamor around from the states because this the charge that the renewable energy generators are supposed to pay is socialized across the grid, right? So somebody has to pay for it. So it's socialized amongst the users, right? So the people who are not using this power are complaining about this. So therefore, we do expect these waivers to be removed, whether it is at the end of 22 when they expire or maybe in 23 or whatever it is. The fact is that once that waiver goes away, the tariff suddenly about a cent will be added to the tariff. Right? So we are at 4.11 cents, for example. Suddenly the tariff, which is typically around 4 cents at the moment, will go to 5 cents. And at that time, the power that we will be supplying, which will be at 4.11 cents, is going to be a lot more attractive in the market than the tariff, which will be the base tariff plus the tariff which the buyers will have to pay for the transmission. So from that perspective, this is a hedge for us that once the transmission charges are removed, we will still be competitive when it comes to the tariff that we are going to be supplying this power at. Going to slide 5, like I mentioned, for these projects we believe are value accretive. The EV EBITDA is, there's a potential for us to be around 6. The opportunity, we have an opportunity to build these projects at an IRR of greater than 20%. And when we say 20%, if we look at the numbers below, which are the key assumptions for this 20% IRR that we talk about, you will see that the numbers are fairly conservative. We have looked at a leverage of only 75%. We have not, looked at that we'll be able to do any financial engineering to improve our returns. That is not included in this. The degradation also, the number for degradation, we've taken it slightly higher than expected. We have also taken a higher interest rate than currently what we are able to get in the market. So we have been conservative in our modeling. And even then, we believe that we will be at 20% plus IRR. So these projects will be hugely accretive as we build out these projects for the company, right? And apart from the numbers that we have taken, like I mentioned, we have taken a very very conservative reduction in the pricing of modules. We have assumed that from today, over the next four years, we have assumed that the modules will drop only 1 cent a year, right? And we have typically seen the modules drop a lot more than that. But we have assumed in our calculations that it will drop only 1 cent. So if the modules drop more than 1 cent every year, then we see an upside to the 20%. Similarly, if we are able to do a bond, then we will see an upside to the return. And also, if we are able to use bifacial modules and trackers on our project, we are told by the manufacturers that the uplift on generation will be quite substantial. So, we believe that at least even if there are any other unforeseen events, 20% IRR is definitely something that we can achieve. And that, given the fact that most portfolios we look at currently are doing around 15%, 16%, mid-teen kind of a number, to be just beyond teens is a very lucrative set of projects for us. If going to slide 6, this just shows the project. The first project is the letter of award has come to us in December. The SECI has about 6 months to sign power purchase agreements for that, which we expect will be done by the middle of this year. And then we have 2 years from then for the first, 1,000 megawatts, and subsequently every year we'll do 1,000 megawatts. So the mid-2022, mid-23, mid-24, mid-25 is when we expect to commission these projects. So in calendar year 25, we expect to be at, 7,000 megawatt capacity, including the 4,000 megawatts and the 3,100 megawatts that we are currently either operating or building. Slide 7 indicates that basically Azure has significant experience in delivering and operating projects. We are a company, in the Indian context, we are the first private IPP. We were the first ones to build ground-mounted utility-scale projects in India. And we have a long history of about 11 years, 12 years of acquiring land, building projects, doing EPC in-house, operating those projects, and driving superior results on our operations. So we believe that this 4,000 megawatts is going to help us in further increasing our efficiency. It will also help us optimize our acquisition, costs of BOS. We expect will continue to decline because of the large capacities that we are building. And because of the fact that we are acquiring such a large number of modules, we get a lot of interest and a lot of attention from the module manufacturers when we visit them in China or in other parts. So the one thing that we are changing a little bit since the time we've come in is that we are looking to see all our projects we've done on an in-house EPC basis. We are, the first time in Azure's history for the Assam project, we have outsourced EPC to be done by a third party. And, we have seen that whatever numbers that we were thinking of achieving with in-house EPC, we can achieve the same numbers or slightly better by outsourcing. So earlier we were, a little bit reluctant to try third-party EPC. But, what we're going to do now is to benchmark our in-house EPC numbers with external EPC and make sure that, we are not stuck on doing everything internally, but to see where we can get the best value for the dollar that we spend and look at external EPC also as we look to do this capacity. Right. Slide 8 is an extremely important slide because, several shareholders and investors were worried that suddenly Azure, which is a pure IPP, was starting to get into manufacturing. So this slide talks about how this tender is not about manufacturing. We are not getting into manufacturing. We don't intend to get into manufacturing. We are not interested in getting into manufacturing. The tender is very, very clear. The bidder who wins the project, the only thing that we have to do is we have to own 26%, a minimum of 26%, so therefore we are going to own 26%, a minimum of 26% in the manufacturing SPV. So for our first 500 megawatts, we have tied up with Wari. Wari is an Indian company which has been manufacturing modules for several years. They have a 2,000 megawatt installed capacity for manufacturing. We have tied up with them. A new SPV has been created, which was formed in December. We own 26% of that SPV. 74% of that SPV is owned by Wari. And the entire work is done by Wari. They will acquire the land for the project. They will place the orders for the manufacturing plant. It's their responsibility to meet the quality standards. It is their responsibility to set up the manufacturing facility. Their responsibility to go out and do the marketing of the 500 megawatts. As the developer, as per the contract, as per the bid conditions, we are not expected or it's not necessary for us to even buy modules from them. If the modules are cheaper to buy from outside of India, we are free to buy modules from outside India. It's not as if the manufacturing facility has been built for this particular tender or under this particular tender, so therefore we have to buy modules from this tender. That's not required. So the only linkage between us as an IPP and the manufacturing business is a $5 million investment that we are going to make as 26% equity in their business. That is about it. And if you look at overall, if you look at the expected CapEx for a 2,000 megawatt portfolio, it's almost $1.2 billion. So in a $1.2 billion CapEx, practically $5 million is what we will spend on taking a 26% stake in a business. And the calculations that we have done, we have assumed that, even if we don't make any return on that $5 million, if it is fully charged, even then it doesn't impact our IRR too much because it's such a small part of the overall CapEx number, right? So, of course, there are, we have in our contract with Wari, there are safeguards built in for this equity. But, in the worst-case situation also, we have made sure that this doesn't impact the profitability of our project. We have done that sensitivity. So it's, and the reason for selection of Wari was that, they are a fairly strong company. They have deep ties with the Indian solar sector. They've been supplying to the government, they've been supplying to IPPs, they've been exporting their modules for several years, and they are a very credible counterparty. We have also, for the next 500 megawatts, we could either sign with Wari for the 500 megawatts more, or we also have another option, which we have gotten ready, another manufacturer with whom we have concluded discussions. So between the two, when we get the LOA for the second 500 megawatt manufacturing, the construct will be the same. In the SPV, we will own only 26%, and we are not we are not supposed, or we are not expected or not constrained to buy from the manufacturing facility. So just to put everyone just to be clear, that even though this is considered a SECI manufacturing bid, that is how this bid is referred to, Solar Energy Corporation of India manufacturing bid. However, there is no linkage really, apart from this 26%, between us and the manufacturer. The slide, the next slide, slide 9, is we have given some forecasts on how our EBITDA is expected to move, how our FFO is expected to move, and the debt forecast. On the left side of the slide, we expect that when we are at about 7 gig portfolio, we'll have an EBITDA between $575 to $600 million. We'll have a free fund flow of about $225 to $300 million and a debt of about $3.2 billion. That is where we intend to be. That is where we expect to be at the end of the 7 gig build-out. This the tariff, the higher profitability of the 4 gig bid will allow us to reduce our debt by EBITDA number also, and we expect it to trend towards what basically when we do a project, each project is built at 5.5 debt EBITDA, right? However, what happens is because there is a mismatch between when the EBITDA comes in and when the debt is drawn. Obviously, the debt is drawn early, and then the EBITDA comes in only the year after the project is in commission. So there is always a, the debt by EBITDA number always looks much higher than individual project debt by EBITDA number. So, but as the size of the business will grow, we expect that, and because the EBITDA numbers from this 4,000 megawatts are going to be better, so we expect that the debt by EBITDA will trend towards 5.5 to 6. On an ongoing basis, on a snapshot basis also, right? So that is something which is very positive for us as a company. Going to slide 10. On slide 10, we have talked about our capex forecast. In FY21, we are working on almost 1,300 megawatts. Hence, our capex outlay is slightly higher. And beyond that, every year we have shown CapEx requirement for building out about 1,000 megawatts of capacity, hence it's between $500 to $700 million. That's how the CapEx is expected to trend over the next 5 years. Then comes to capital. Obviously, apart from all of the other things, we need money to build these projects. And, looking at the debt part of the portfolio, we are seeing a strong demand on debt. We have recently closed we've got a term sheet, a final term sheet from external lenders for one of our 300 megawatt projects, where the including hedge, the rate of interest is between 9 to 9.25%. The Indian debt is during construction is more in the range of 10 to 10.25, which reduces by 25 to 50 basis points once the project is commissioned. But external debt we are seeing at between 9 to 9.25%. So at the moment, out of the $1.1 billion, the $1 billion that we have on our balance sheet, $850 million is to external bonds. Right? So we have very little exposure to the Indian debt market. So, we don't foresee a problem out of the $3.2 billion debt, right? I mean, even if we assume that we're going to have only $1 billion, which is going to be external, to raise $2 billion debt in India is not going to be too difficult, right? But the market is much deeper than that. So we don't foresee any problems on arranging debt. Equity, of course, we will need equity for this build-out. Some of it will come from internal accruals. Some of it will have to be raised. Some of it we will get from recycling of our projects. And some of it we will hopefully throw out if we go into a bond, if we go into a bond issuance, we hope to throw out some uplift. So that is how we intend to fund the debt and equity for build out of these capacities. Going to slide 11, we talk again about our debt, right? So I mean, I am reiterating the fact that, you know, when we, though we have only $1 billion of debt on our balance sheet, but overall, if you include the debt that we have raised initially and then we've cycled it out with the green bond or the local refinancing that we've done, we've raised over $2.5 billion of debt over the 10 years that Azure has been around. And this particular portfolio, which is 4,000 megawatts, you know, with the higher tariffs, of course, the debt, you know, it will be easier to get for us. We are also excited about, you know, doing an amortizing green bond like another company has done over the last 4 or 5 months with SECI as a counterparty and this high tariff. We believe that our portfolio, which we are building, will be a portfolio which will be investment grade. And we will be able to raise a 16-year or 20-year fully amortized bond to fund this portfolio. And we have seen that you know, when we raised the bond, it was about 9.5%, you know, including hedge. But once we hit investment grade, that will give us an uplift of between 60 to 80 basis points straight away on that number. So you know, we are hopeful that we can actually get sub 9 when we do a fully amortized 16-year or 20-year green bond. This is how the market looks like at the moment. Obviously, we'll have to see what makes sense at the time when we actually hit the market. But as you know, as solar becomes more and more mainstream in India, you know, there is more and more domestic lending that is coming into the market, and we are seeing that you know, that lenders are very happy to lend to the solar sector. Going to slide 12, right? So, you know, we, like I had mentioned in the beginning, one of the things that we have done since we have come in is to try and drive our costs down. You know, what we are trying to do is to invest, in fact, more on our O&M side. So we are looking to, you know, to introduce robotic cleaning, to do, you know, some other automated tools. So you know, we want to spend some capex on our operating projects to see how we can drive higher efficiencies and higher revenue, higher generation from our existing portfolio. But we are focusing on lowering the support costs. Right. So very recently, over the last couple of weeks, we have done some retrenchments. Also, about 15 to 18% of our workforce we have reduced in an attempt to reduce our G&A and you know, streamline our operations. Similarly, other G&A steps that we are taking are, for example, on all the costs. Like we have you know, given up a part of our office because, of course, when we have laid off some staff, we can afford to reduce the size of our office, so we have done that already. We are also reducing some of the, you know, the costs that we were incurring on vendors for IT and other vendors. We are looking at aggressively, you know, negotiating with our vendors. We don't want to decrease. We still want to go with Tier 1 vendors, but you know, by creating some competitive tension between the various Tier 1 vendors, we are looking to save money in this coming financial year on many many cost saving initiatives. So the tax regime also the government has changed, right, over the last year. Certain you know, the minimum alternative tax has moved from 18% to 15%. The corporate tax has moved from 25% to 22%. And in fact, for the period between 2019 and 2023. There is a, you know, as per the notification, if a company is incorporated post 1st of October 2019 and builds its operating plant by 2023, the corporate tax is further reduced from 22% to 15%. So we will take advantage of that for, you know, total of about 2,000 megawatts of our portfolio to drive down the tax also. We have all also taken initiatives to, you know, we have gone away from the EPC margin kind of accounting. We have moved, tried to move everything to the SPVs. All the costs, whether it is the construction cost or the O&M cost or the people cost, we are starting to book at the SPV level where those costs are incurred, so that there is greater transparency when we look at the SPV cost, so that whether it is the investors, whether it's the analysts, whether it is the shareholders, everybody can see where the cost is being incurred. And as a company also, we know which is the healthy project, which is the project that needs support, which is the project that needs help to get back to health, so that there is no, you know, there is no cross-subsidization amongst projects, and each project has to stand on its own. And if there is a weak project, then the weak project can be focused on and fixed. So we are, also that helps us in reducing our tax outgo, because we were in the EPC margin business. The EPC margin was getting taxed because it was a profit in the hands of the holding company. That we are doing away with. And our hope is that in this financial year, we'll be, you know, almost zero cash tax we will pay on our business as a whole. So that is something which we are trying to achieve, and we will hope to do the same. So suddenly you will see that on a standalone basis, our holdco will look, shrunk. But overall, when you consolidate the whole company, it will be a more healthy business. So, like I mentioned in the first slide, if you go to slide 13, we expect to be self-funded by the time we have completed this portfolio. Of course, this is dependent on the market a little bit, because you know if there is a decline in the cost of building out projects, then it is possible that we don't have to wait till the end of this portfolio build out to be self-funded. Because the capex requirements, if the price of building the project drops, then obviously the free cash available from a smaller capacity of a smaller portfolio of projects will be enough to sustain us, in our growth. If the cost remains about the same as what it is now, we expect that by the time the portfolio is built out, we will be self-sufficient and we'll be able to power our growth going forward. So when I say power our growth, I'm assuming that 4 years down too, we'll be looking at doing between 800 to 1200 megawatts a year. And to that extent, by the time this capacity is built out, I believe that between 800 to 1200 megawatts of capacity we can build from internal accruals itself. And as the capacity grows, of course, you know, beyond that, we will be able to return, money to our shareholders. And, the last line that we have written on this slide about we will grow only if returns are above our cost of capital has been something that we've been talking about in every earnings call and every interaction that we've had with our investors and with our shareholders. This is something that we believe in firmly. This is the reason why we have given up those projects, the 450 megawatts that have already been given up, and another 150 megawatts that we are on the verge of giving up, on the way to give up, because we are not focused on growing the company for the sake of growth. We don't want to be the biggest company in the country. We don't want to have the largest megawatt capacity. That is not our intention. Our intention is to be able to return money to the shareholders, and the only way that we can return money to shareholders is if we make money. And for that, important is for us to generate cash and not to have a larger capacity to talk about. So that remains our focus. And we will do whatever it takes to make sure that when we raise capital, we raise it such that our cost of capital is the lowest possible. Because the IRRs are very high, it's an easy way out. But we still want to ensure that we are not benchmarking our raise only on the returns of the project, right? So we have to benchmark our raise to the market and to make sure that we get the lowest cost of capital to build out these projects so we can make them most profitable. As we, the slide 14 talks about our ESG standards and what we stand for. And, the reason for having the slide in here is to bring to fore the fact that, regardless of what we talk about as a company. We talk about growth, we talk about size, we talk about capacity, we talk about regulatory challenges, we talk about debt, we talk about equity. But we would like to continue to focus, and you know, we have focused over the last 6 months a lot on our ESG initiative. So we strongly believe in safety. We strongly believe in the environment. We strongly believe that, you know, we need to have corporate responsibility to the communities we operate in, and we need to work with the highest standards of governance in our business. And this is a company that everybody who works in the company needs to be proud of being part of this company, and we want to make sure that we follow the highest standards of ESG. Sustainability accounting, sustainability reporting has been something that we have not done, and we have promised to do it, to have our sustainability report out by the end of this financial year. We are hopeful, most of the work has been completed, and we are hopeful that we will actually come out with a report hopefully by next month, well before the end of this financial year. And, we hope to build on that and continue doing good work on this side, right? And to drive this process forward, to drive the social process forward, to drive the environment process forward, the safety process forward, and I have been visiting sites myself. Murli and I have been to a lot of sites over the last 2 or 3 months. Personally, I have, out of the five large states where we are present, I've already been to 4 of them. I've visited Karnataka, I've visited Gujarat, I've visited Rajasthan, and I've visited Uttar Pradesh. And by the end of this month, I will finish Punjab. So that will, over the last six and a half months, I would have been in the company. I would have visited, many of the sites that we work on in all the states where we are working. And by the end of this financial year, I hope to have visited almost all the projects which are greater than 10 megawatts of the company, right? And we continue to push. As I was saying in the morning to another meeting, that we always talk about how India lives in its villages, right? India is its villages. The same thing we try and push in our company now, that our company is from the site, right? The money is to be made at the site. We need to have fewer people at HO. We need to have more people at site. And even the people who are at HO need to spend a lot of time at site. So, I and Murli, we both lead by example. I intend to be on our sites, whether it's the construction site or an operating site, at least twice a month, go to different sites. And, he does the same. And we intend to, make sure that the senior team continues to go to site as often as possible to ensure that we are as close to our operations as possible, to drive the efficiencies, to drive the morale, to drive the motivation of our team members who are doing what they can to take this company forward.
Right. Great. Thank you very much, Ranjit. And at this point in time, I'd like to turn it to this room. Any questions in this room? And then we're going to, operator, if you will also just give the instructions for asking questions over the phone.
As a reminder, to ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble the roster.
So with that, any questions in the room?
I actually have a question on the project that you just won. Are there any aspects to this project that's why the tariff is higher than average?
So if I I was just notified by the operator that it's rather faint. So just to restate the question, if you don't mind.
Oh, you have to speak louder?
Yeah, please.
So with the project that you just won, the fact that you have received tariff that is higher than average, I'm just wondering if there are any aspects to this project that is, either like its difficulties or other reason why the tariff is higher.
So as such, the tariff has moved up across tariffs that existed, for example, at the time when we won the auctions last year or the year before, have come down to about 3.5 to 3.6 cents. Currently, the ceiling tariffs are just below 4 cents, right? And the last auction was at 3.75 cents. It closed at around 3.75, 3.8 cents in the month of October or November. So from that, if you look at from that perspective, you know, though the current tariff which we are building projects at, this tariff is 15% higher. It is about, you know, 6-7% higher than the tariff that closed in October. The reason for the tariff being higher here is simply because of the fact that there is a perceived risk, right, with having manufacturing linked to a project, right? So when the last time the auctions were done, they were done at a tariff of about 4 cents, and nobody had participated in it. So the government actually did two things. They not only tweaked the conditions of the contract. So, for example, the fact that we don't have to buy from the Indian manufacturer or the manufacturing SPV was not there in the last tender, right? So fortunately, the way that the conditions moved, because of the fact that the last time they were not able to attract enough bidders, or in fact any bidder apart from Azure, the conditions moved favorably. Right, so therefore they took out some stuff that, for example, you need only 26% equity, you need not buy from them, and so on and so forth. So they moved those conditions in the favor of the bidders, and they moved the tariff condition also in the favor of bidders. So this is, and in fact, it is very strange that when the bid happened, till then, literally many people, many of the larger IPPs that did not take part in this auction were sort of left kicking themselves, because even in our case, simply because it's manufacturing linked and because we have to make an investment of, you know, equity capital in a business that is not core to us, requires a lot of internal approvals, right? We have to present to the board several times. We have to run through hoops, you know, take legal opinions as to how we are not going to be impacted. There was, you know, questions raised by the investors and shareholders and our board about, you know, impact on reputation. If, for example, you are a 26% equity owner in a project which is not delivering modules that are good, what happens to you? What happens to you? So, you know, so even though the overall amount of money involved is low, there are a lot of other perceived risks. So many of the other companies, you know, by the time they got their act together and started to get all of these approvals internally, I think only two of us or three of us who managed to take part in the auction finally managed to actually get all those approvals in time. And soon after the auction, took place, SECI was actually, a lot of companies asked them to do another auction, right? And there is pressure on SECI to come out with another manufacturing tender auction, because now many of those companies have taken those internal approvals that they need to take. So we got lucky, literally, because, you know, we have taken part in this auction twice before. So we have been following up very, very rigorously with SECI and with the ministry to fix some of the conditions that were making it difficult for us to get our approval. So they fixed those conditions. We took part in the auction, and we managed to, to get this capacity. So I feel that we were just lucky in this particular case to be at the right place at the right time. And I'm sure there will be another auction similar to this, similar structure, another 5-6 months perhaps. And I believe that the tariffs will be more competitive there than they are over here.
One quick question on the CapEx or equity investment for the manufacturing CapEx. So I think you said $5 million. Is that for the 500 megawatts or the full 1 gigawatt?
For 500 megawatts. For 500 megawatts, the expected outlay is, in fact, the CapEx for these two companies, I mean, Wari has one CapEx number and the other company has a different CapEx number. So if we actually go with the other party, the CapEx requirement for them, they have asked for even less than 5 million. So Worry, the way they are building their plant, it's about $20 million is the equity and overall expenditure. Because they are not able to get this at 25-75, they have assumed the 30-70 mix.
Mm-hmm.
So the capital expenditure is, I think, about $70 million odd for the Worry project. And for the other manufacturer, it's slightly lower. I think it's about $60 million or so for the other manufacturer. So, you know, the actual outlay is slightly lower there.
Good. And when could we expect the announcement on the other manufacturer for the second one?
The meeting I had with the SECI MD on Wednesday India was, he said that within 10 days they expect to get their internal approval to give us the LOA.
Got it. Okay. And just on the capital recycling of one of the ways of financing the projects, this equity needs. I think it comes around $800 million of equity needs for yourself. So how should we think about the various options? Could you just like probably go through that? You briefly touched upon it, that capital recycling is one of them, and followed by equity issuance or debt recycling via green bonds. But where do you see the most opportunities, or how much uplift do you expect from selling the projects in the market and versus financing them at a 6x EBITDA internally?
So I think, to be fair, we will have to raise fresh equity, right? I mean, it is not possible for us to generate internal accruals or through green bonds or through sale of assets, $600 million. That's not going to happen, mm-hmm. right? What we do want to do is to try and see opportunistically at what point, right, can we get the lowest cost of capital from which bucket, right? So that is what we have to figure out, right? Internal accruals will always come first. And whatever we are accruing internally, whatever we are generating internally, we will use that for sure, right away. And then it comes, you know, whether we go to the market or we sell assets, or we do a bond, right? So those three will need to be seen as to in what time frame we will do that. So like I mentioned, that we have appointed a banker for some of the assets, for some recycling assets. So that process, they have given a very aggressive timeline, but you know how it is. It will probably take 6 months or 7 months before we see anything. So, I mean, let's see. It's difficult to say we will have to come to market, but certainly we'll have to come to market at some point in time, and we will try to delay it as much as possible so that, we are able to take our, show better results, show the results of whatever we've been doing, get the share price to reflect our true value, and perhaps raise equity at that point in time from the market. And in the meanwhile, try and do whatever we can internally.
So just one follow-up and then pass along. So you said you could delay it to a certain extent. So when would you need the equity investments or the CapEx for the 4 gigawatts? Or rather, does it all have to be in 2021, 22, or could it be more spread out over the 5 years?
So it will be spread over 5 years, but certainly in 2021, we will need capital. We are starting to need capital even now because for the manufacturing tender, for the manufacturing part, the equity for the manufacturing, because obviously those manufacturing units need to come up in the next 12 to 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
For the manufacturing units, we have to start putting in equity soon, right? And also for the initial, we will start doing some land work. We have to get our connectivities done. So some BGs have to be given for that. So some amount of money will happen, right away. But, of course, the bulk of the money will start happening only next year.
Is the factory module only, or is it cell plus module?
It's cell plus module.
Cell plus module.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would have been a lot cheaper.
Yeah. I was surprised to see that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you visited most of your sites.
Yes.
And I was wondering, do you have any key observations of perhaps technology node differences between the different sites and how that results in better operating performance and thus IRR?
Oh, definitely. I mean,
yeah.
The sites, there are good sites and not so good sites, so as always in every portfolio. So that's why I had mentioned also that we are looking at deploying some CapEx, to make our O&M better. I think fundamentally one good thing is that we are not seeing any degradation of the modules. As in, like, we are seeing only, a degradation which is as per the technical specifications. So we are not seeing any outsized degradation. To me, that is always the key concern, right? Because that is something that you cannot do anything about. And that's a disaster. Everything else can be fixed, right? If your road inside the yard is not very good and it takes time for the team to go to another, to the different parts, or if you have a particular repetitive failure in an inverter, or, there is some shadow effect, or there is some, grading thing that we have to do, or something we can improve on the cleaning of modules, or cutting of grass, or on two sides we have a rodent issue, right? I mean, the rats eat the cables. So, you have to start changing the cables out to rodent, cables that they can't eat, kind of thing. So those kind of things, you can fix, you can put some money in. And the good thing is we get paid on time, so therefore we have money available to put that money back into the projects to improve their performance. So, yes, there is a, sort of a grading between projects. Some projects are better than others. And the objective is that we take that as an opportunity to improve the projects that we have currently, and thereby improve the revenue from those projects. So, just as a very basic thing, before we came, the typical target for a PR ratio, the performance ratio, was at 75%. Right. So the whole company used to target a performance ratio of 75. In very basic terms, a ratio. This ratio is basically you have a device which measures the amount of incident solar light, right? So you say that if this is the solar light that device is measured, this is the generation you should have had, and you see the actual generation which your plant has done, and divide the two. Very, very simple, right? And that number we were targeting 75%. And we have said that, look, this year we're going to target 80% because that's what the industry does. I guess the industry has moved on from 75 to 80. So, so this time we have given a target of 80. So when I used to go to sites in the beginning, everybody was very proud of the fact that they were at 77% or 78%, and they had all beaten the 75% number. Right? This time we have said that, look, guys, 75 is not good enough. We need to beat 80. Right? So we need to up your game. Right? And not only that, this 80 also goes up and down with seasons. So in we see the best seasons are January, February, March, when the insulation is high and the temperature is low, right? Followed by the second calendar quarter, where the insulation is high, but the temperature is high, which degrades performance. And we see the worst during monsoon season over the summer, when it rains and it's cloudy, and therefore you see the worst PRs and the worst insulation. Right? So we are doing, when I track O&M, I have a, I meet with the O&M team every week, and we don't look at plant load factors. We don't look at generation. Because really the team cannot do anything about the generation. If there is sun, there will be generation. If there is no sun, there will be no generation. So to say that, you guys didn't generate this month or this week or this day is really not relevant. What is relevant is what have you done with the resource that you got. So we started tracking only PR ratio, right? That you got X generation. Did you convert 80% of that into electrons or no? Right. So and we are doing weekly model PRs for that particular plant. For every plant, we do a model PR and we see what is the deviation from that model PR for that week. And for the month, we have calculated an as-built PR that, the way the plant has been built, this is what your PR should be. And that's communicated to the plant. So it could be 82%, it could be 83%, it could be 76%, but on a monthly basis, that's the target that they are doing.
You mentioned that there was a mechanism that if the plant, the 500 megawatt plant, was a higher cost than other options, that you could move to other options? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yes.
Could you talk about the mechanism? Is that on a cost per watt basis, price per watt basis?
It's a module price. So basically, if the module price from that manufacturing SPV is higher than what I can get from the market in China or wherever, then I am not constrained to buy from that manufacturing SPV. I can buy from everywhere. So as such, for my business, for the 2,000 megawatts that I am building, that manufacturing SPV has to compete just like everyone else.
And you're not obligated to take it?
Not obligated. Not constrained, not obligated.
So it seems that it's really not much of a higher risk for you to get this higher priced tariff.
Absolutely.
Just the 5 million per 500
That's
megawatts.
Exactly so, right. That yeah. is exactly right, right? That is exactly right.
Operator, I see we have a question from Phil Shen.
Yes, Phil Shen from Roth Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the questions. As a follow-on to that question, Renji, can you talk through the timing of when you have to lock the module pricing in?
So the module pricing, Phil, is going to be locked in only about a year before the plant is expected to be commissioned. So, say for example, for 2022, when we have to commission in June of 2022, for example, then we will be locking in prices only in June of 2021, right? Because when we go to, Murali visited China and met all the module manufacturers in the second week of December, So all of them, they have a technology roadmap. They, that this is how they expect the efficiency of their modules to move. This is where they expect the cost to move. But nobody is willing to, say that this is the price of module I can supply to you, or this is the technical aspects of the module, as in the watt peak of the module that I'm able to supply to you 1.5 years down the road or 1 year down the road. Forget about 2 or 3 years down the road. So from that perspective, we expect that, the module technology, whether it is bifacial, whether it is monofacial, whether it is something that comes out new, will be known only about a year in advance of the project commissioning, and not much more than that.
Okay, great. And I'm assuming you're not using bifacial now. When do you expect to possibly start to use bifacial technology?
So this is something new. We had actually, till we visited China, we had not even considered using bifacial on our ground-mounted projects. During this visit, the manufacturers said that they are very confident of the bifacial technology that they are manufacturing now. And they believe that bifacial in the state of Rajasthan with tracker would give us an uplift which would be much higher than the capital cost that we will be incurring on the bifacial plus tracking. So what we are thinking of doing is, in one of our under construction projects, we are looking to do maybe a couple of megawatts each of bifacial and bifacial with tracker to see what the performance uplift is, and see whether, going forward for the next round of projects, whether we should be using this technology or not. So far, we have not used, and like I mentioned, we have not even considered using it.
Okay, great. And then coming back to the module sourcing again, if you were to guess, given that, you've gotten to know Wari well and certainly the Chinese manufacturers and what they're promising and talking to you about for 2022 and 3 and so forth, what do you expect the mix of Indian versus non-Indian suppliers to be when you start to execute on the 4 gigawatts? Do you think it might be meaningful from India, or do you feel like it's, this might be a bit of a tough question to answer, but so sorry to put you a bit on the spot, but just curious, what's your gut feeling on that?
No, you're you're very right. It's a tough question to answer. I would have said that myself. But to tell you the truth, when we were doing these negotiations with Bori and Premier, we were pleasantly surprised by the competitiveness that they were showing right, to deliver modules. They are less confident on the cells. Cells are a little bit more tricky to construct and to manufacture and to stabilize. On the manufacturing, earlier, till maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, if I remember correctly, the difference used to be somewhere between 3 to 4 cents between, getting it from a Chinese supplier and getting it from an Indian supplier. The negotiations that we've had with them currently seem to indicate that that has, become less than half of that number. So as the capacities increase, right, and Wari is now 2,000 megawatts. With this additional capacity, there will be 2,500. They already have another 500,000 megawatts that they keep talking about. I don't know whether they will do that or no, but they are talking about it for sure. So perhaps as their size grows and when they hit maybe 3 gig or 4 gig a year, perhaps that number would be maybe just a cent different from getting it from China, and maybe they would be, that will be something that will make sense for us, given that it will be manufactured locally, so we will have more control over the logistics. We can get it more in time and save, the freight cost and save in the interest cost or the LC cost and so on. So, I think that point is at least a couple of years away, but it is possible
okay.
that we get to that point. It is possible. It looks possible.
Great. I have a few more questions. If you guys want to switch back to the room, let me know. In terms of the LOA for the second 2 gigawatts, I apologize if I missed it, but when do you expect to receive that second LOA?
So they had initially told us that, in this week, this current week is when they will, issue the LOA, right? But when I met the, like I mentioned, when I met the SECI MD Wednesday, India time, he mentioned that it would be a week, 10 days more before they are able to issue the LOA. They were, the green shoe option is something that is new for SECI. And to tell you the truth, it was not fully thought out when it was inserted into the tender. So with relation to, stuff that we have to do around that, whether it is the bank guarantees, the qualification criteria and this and that and the other, they are in a little bit of a tizzy around that and trying to figure that out internally. So they, there is pressure on them from the central government also, from the ministry also, because, this is a very prestigious tender because it is Make in India, promoting Make in India, and it will add 2,000-3,000 megawatts of manufacturing capacity to the system. So it's a high profile tender. So they are burning the midnight oil to get this LOA out. They expect 7 to 10 days, but I would say maybe 2 weeks, and we should have that in the next 2 weeks.
Great. That brings up the topic of risks around this project. Obviously, it sounds fantastic. Congratulations on the win again, and also on your election for the additional 2 gigawatts. But what do you see as the risks around the execution, or perhaps with the government or with funding, whether it's bank funding or what have you, that could inhibit the ability for you guys to execute on the 4 gigawatts?
India is, full of surprises. So there'll be risks that I could tell you, and there'll be risks that will come out of the left field, which I would have never thought of. But land remains always in India to acquire land. The good thing on the land is that when we were building projects as late as last year, we were looking at 5.5 acres of land per megawatt. For our projects which are being built in this current year, we're looking at 4.5. Going forward, for the projects that we are planning for next year, we're looking at 4 acres per megawatt. The watt peak of modules that we were using last year was 330, and the modules that we have just closed with a Chinese manufacturer for the projects that are under construction are as high as 440 watt peak, right? So almost a 30% increase in the watt peak, over 18 months. So, that reduces the requirement of land. So land definitely remains a risk always in India, but as the amount of land required comes down, it is better. The other thing which remains a risk is the duty which the government imposes, like they suddenly imposed SGD, which was 25% to begin with, and then 20%, and now it's currently 15%. So you never know, the government could extend it beyond July and call it 25% again, or call it 30%, or call it 20%. We don't know. This is pass-through for us, like I mentioned during the presentation. We are not going to be impacted by the by a change in these duties, because we are protected under the change in law of the contract. However, in the short term, it's a pain, because we still need to build a project, we still need to pay that money, and that money comes back to us post the project having been constructed. So in the short term, it's a working capital mess which we have to deal with. We might assume a particular amount of equity to be put into a particular project, and suddenly that equity number goes up because now we have to pay for this duty. So that's a risk. So it's not a risk to the profitability of the project, but it's a risk to the projections that we make on the equity requirement that we might have in the short run. So apart from these two risks, given the fact that even if the module pricing doesn't go down, our base case scenario when we got our approvals, internal approvals, were assuming that the module prices will not change at all over 5 years, which was super, super conservative. Even then, these projects are much better than the projects that we are currently building. So I don't see that as a risk. So I think the two risks I would think, one is land and one is these duty structures. Land is a more longer term risk, and the duty structure is a more shorter term risk. I don't know.
Transmission, maybe.
Transmission, we have already got for the 2,000 megawatts. I don't see transmission. Availability of transmission infrastructure, I don't see as there is. In fact, we are in a better position because, what happens is that otherwise when you win something, you can lock in. If you win 1,000 megawatts a year, right, you're competing with the other 10,000 megawatts that has been auctioned out that year, right? And, that is going to be built over the next 2 years, right? So you're 1,000 out of 10,000 for the next 2 years, and then 1,000 out of 10,000 for the next 2 years. Here, we are, 4,000 megawatts, which we can lock for the next 5 years, right? So it actually is better for us, because we will be able to lock out a lot of the other players. We will be able to lock into the capacities of PGCIL, of the central transmission utility, in advance. The connectivity application under normal circumstances is a 2-year expiry. So if you take connectivity within 2 years, if you don't connect, that connectivity expires. Right. So therefore, you are always only 2 years. You can plan only for 2 years. In our case, we are getting a special exemption to plan for 5.5 years. So, in fact, this reduces our risk on the transmission availability.
Ranjit, another quick question on that risk of land. The plan is to commission 1,000 or gigawatt in 2022. So, if you don't have 1,000 megawatts worth of land, by what date is it too late? In other words, do you need to have it by the end of 2021, 1,000 megawatts worth of land times, 4,000 acres of land, or do you need to have it by the middle of 2021, or do you need to have it by the beginning of 2021. So what is the deadline of having that land so that you don't miss your one gigawatt target for 2022?
Right. So that's a very good question, Phil. You know, typically what we are seeing is that, when we do these 1,000-megawatt power purchase agreements, we're going to break them down into power purchase agreements of between 200 to 300 megawatts each. So we expect to have four PPAs in this 1,000 megawatts. Also, we want to, typically we would like to do 500 megawatts in one state and 500 megawatts in another state, you know, so that we can use different contractors and we can use, different teams to do, so in the sense that we don't want to, even though we might want to do 1,000 megawatts in one substation, we would do that over 2 years, over two cycles, and, instead of doing it over one cycle to diversify the risk. So assuming that you have to do 250 megawatts approximately at each site, what we are, because currently we are doing these 300 megawatt projects, what we are told is that we need 6 months of construction time to build a 300 megawatt project, right? So so from that perspective, you know, if we are to commission a plant in June of 2022, right, we need to have land by December of 2021. And we should look at least a three-month buffer to be on the safe side. So I would say that to be able to commission with low risk by middle of 2022, we should have the land tied down by September of 2021, right? At least half the land, at least if you're doing 1,000 megawatts, at least for two of those projects, we should have them by September so that we can start construction on those projects, because it's not as if we're going to be able to turn on the entire 1,000 megawatts in one day. So at least for 500 megawatts, we should have land in place completely by 9 months in advance. And for 500 megawatts, we should have land completely in place at least 6 months in advance of the commissioning.
Great. That's really helpful. And of that gigawatt expected for 2022, I can imagine you guys have already started to think through where that could be, which states and so forth. Have you, we use this language in the U.S., have you soft circled? Do you have some rough guesstimates as or initial ideas as to where that can be? And have you already soft circled a lot of that gigawatt, or how much of that gigawatt have you already identified?
So the first LOA of 2,000 megawatts, we have already chosen our substation. Right, so those have been applied for in PGCIL in the month of December already. So we have soft circled in. So this is over three substations. This 2,000 megawatts is going to be built. 1,000 megawatts in one substation, 500 and 500 in two other substations. So there we have soft circled land, like you said, and now we are in the process of taking proposals from the land aggregators in these areas. We are targeting only the first 500 megawatts, because for the remaining three 500 megawatt parcels, we need them over the next 5 years. So we will not be, focusing on those, but for the first 500 megawatts, we have started the process of getting proposals from the aggregators. But the entire 2,000 megawatts, where we are going to build them in terms of the substations, we have locked down the capacity for that. For the next 2,000 megawatts, which we want to do outside the state of Rajasthan, we have done the visits to about, six substations that we had identified. We have, shortlisted three of them and visited some sites, but not yet applied, because, we need the LOA before we can apply for those stations. So we are still doing, because we have an extra week, 10 days, we are still looking at other parcels of land before finalizing which substations we want to go to.
Okay, so it sounds like you've made some good progress already. I've asked a lot of questions. Thank you. I'll pass it on.
If you don't mind, we have some questions in the room.
Hi. One question I have is I did notice that In the presentation, you said by the end of project completion, debt level is going to be around $3.2 billion, which I think that's around, what, a $1.5 billion up. But given you haven't fully decided your mix between your funding channels, how, you know, do you think that's a reasonable estimate, or do you think as market conditions vary, we could see very different, I guess, actual debt rates?
No, on the debt side, we don't see a difference. The debt could only go down if the CapEx, you know, contracts. We have assumed only 1 cent change in the, you know, in the module costing, and no change in the BOS costing going forward.
Mm-hmm.
If we decide to do bifacial with tracker, this could go up marginally. If the module prices come down, then this could go down marginally. But, you know, in terms of the debt sizing, we would expect that the mid-level is, you know, about 450 million per 1,000 megawatts, so 1.8 billion over the 4,000 megawatts, with a plus minus 5 or 10%, depending upon what technology we finally deploy, but not vastly different from that.
Okay. And then also you talked about you're starting to consider asset sales. I'm just wondering, do you have like a target EBITDA range at which you deem that acceptable? Because I think some other players have been selling them around like 7 times-ish. So I don't know if you have a target.
So just to make sure that we, everybody on the webcast can hear, the question was about asset sales and potential multiples that we would look for.
Right. So 7 is... is at the lower end of the target. Like I said, it will depend on, you know, the market conditions, right? I mean, I hope, you know, that if we have to sell at 7, it will be cheaper to actually raise in the market instead of selling assets at EV EBITDA of 7. So it will be a decision that will be, but you are right that assets have been sold in the market at an EV EBITDA of 7 also. I mean, when we sold at almost 8.5, 9, right? But then since then, it contracted and people sold at 7 also. But we are hopeful that when we are out there trying to sell, because we are not a desperate seller, so therefore, you know, we can quote-unquote try and time the market and, you know, and see that we don't end up doing something which will just destroy value for this, you know, because it's not as if we don't have, you know, shareholders that don't want to put money, right? I mean, the shareholders want to put money. It's for us to decide whether the cost at which they want to, you know, they want to invest in us is the right thing for us. So we want to weigh those alternatives.
I have just a general question. As a project owner, you've seen a 30% increase in module power output in a relatively short amount of time in the last 2 years. We're looking at potentially another 20% improvement from bifacial, which, of course, becomes more economic as the cells get more efficient. So you could have a 50% plus improvement in power output. When does it make sense to go back to the vintage projects and repower with new modules? And I'm just trying to think, for global supply and demand, could we see a massive repowering of pre-2011, 2012 utility-scale projects?
So, you know, that's an interesting question. Not really thought about that, because you basically have to, you're saying that you basically have to junk the modules that currently are there, right? The
you don't have to,
is,
but if you're
know,
getting the same tariff.
Right, I know, but
yeah.
The thing is that there are, in many of those older PPAs, there are you know, caps on the PLF. So what will happen is that when the modules are junked, we'll be able to replace only some of them, in the sense that, I mean, you know, basically we take out 10 structures of modules and put back 6 structures of modules, right? It would be advantageous if we could put back the entire 10, right, and therefore generate a lot more energy and sell it at that higher tariff, right? But, you know, I'm not in favor of doing that, simply because at the end of the day, like, you know, it needs to make sense for both parties, right? I mean, it will be patently unfair where, you know, we have a very high tariff, which is like 8 cents or 10 cent tariff, and then suddenly we are generating X energy for the, you know, for the state, and the state is still buying and still paying us on time a tariff which is twice the tariff of that they are paying for another project, or more than twice the tariff that they are paying for the project, and suddenly we double the amount of energy that we are supplying to them. So they will cotton on, you know, very, very quickly, and that could have repercussions. So wherever the power purchase agreements allow, we have already been doing overloading on our current sites. Right? Currently also in the state of Uttar Pradesh and in the state of Gujarat, we are currently doing overloading, right? 5% here, 10% there, 15% there, to try and improve our project performance, right? But to do it on such a high, you know, higher scale, I wonder if that will pass muster. So that is something which we'll have to see on a case-by-case basis, looking at the power purchase agreements and seeing what we can do and what we cannot do over there.
Storage.
Storage would be great, yeah. But at the end of the day, even with storage, you are going to end up supplying higher amounts of energy to the grid, right? So you might not supply that at the peak time. You might supply that in the night or whatever. But we will not get any extra money for it. And at the end of the day, the utility will end up paying for it regardless of whether we supply it during the day or night. So you are right to the extent that we could take, you know, make an argument with them that, look, we're supplying this at your peak demand time. So, you know, the rate that you're giving us is still, you know, something which is beneficial to you. But that is an argument that will have to be made.
Thank you.
You mentioned about you identified another auction that might come to market in the next 6 months. Do you anticipate Azure to be out of the bidding cycle in the near term, given that you're already tied up with 4 gigawatts of build-out? So, or do you anticipate if some projects do medium threshold, you might want to continue growing megawatts?
So our current thing, actually, is that we believe we are right-sized for doing 1,000 megawatts. Till we are, you know, till we have stabilized our planning for 1,000 megawatts, till, you know, so we are doing, at the moment, we're doing 1,200 megawatt construction, right? And then this will happen hopefully by the end of this year or beginning of next year, we will be over that hump. So, and that is not something that Azure has done in the past ever, where we have got 1,200 megawatts to do over the next 8 or 9, 12 months, right? So at this point in time, we would like to stay away from that that bit. We would not want to add another 2,000 megawatts to be done over the next 5 years on already the 4,000 megawatts that we are doing. We want to prove to ourselves that we can do the 1,000 megawatts a year and, you know, deliver 1,000 megawatts a year on time, on budget, and so on and so forth before we take that leap of going from, you know, we've gone from 600 to 1,000, and before we prove 1,000, we go to 1,200, 1,500. I think that will be too much of a risk for us. We would prefer to prove, you know, to ourselves that we can do 1,000 and deliver 1,000 a year before we take the next step. So our short-term plan was to just stay with this, right, and take part in any new tech bids, right, if there is an RTC bid that comes out, right, which has some new technical aspects attached to it. If a storage bid comes out or a hybrid bid comes out, a couple of hundred megawatts here, a couple of hundred megawatts there, yes, participate. But on a whole scale, you know, 2,000 megawatts bid, we would, in the short term at least, in the next 6 to 9 months, I think we would stay away. Even if the tariff is attractive, we would, you know, it would be too much of a risk.
Operator, are there any other questions?
There are currently zero questions in queue.
Go ahead. Did you say no questions in the queue?
Yeah, no questions in the queue.
Okay. I misunderstood. Are there any other questions in the room? We are getting close to our completion time. Any last questions? With that, Ranjit, do you want to have a closing statement?
No, it's just that, you know, I've been in this company now, today is what, 16th, right? So day after, well, tomorrow will be 6 months in this job, and it's been a very exciting journey. When we had, you know, come into to Azure, it was a complete black box the first few months, trying to figure out which project is what, the names of the projects, and you know, it used to be very difficult to fully understand. But going to site, seeing the project, meeting the team members, and you know, working with the shareholders, working with the investors, it's been a huge learning experience, and you know, we feel a lot more confident about the path forward for Azure. And excited about the times to come. Just, you know, over the next 8 to 12 months, our target is to deliver those 1,200 megawatts that we are building. And, you know, we are at the moment building out the budget for FY21. So the next 8 to 12 months, we'll have to deliver on those, you know, Q1 FY21 and Q2 FY21 numbers, and not fall behind as we have fallen behind in the last couple of quarters on what we have projected. So that is our, you know, that is, these are the two very important things for us, you know, meet the numbers that we put out and to, you know, and to build the projects. And, you know, excited to be part of that, that journey.
Thank you, operator. And with that, we'll go ahead and conclude.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.